Okay, time to get started. After the quick room change, we're finally set to go. My name's Mike Niehaus. I'm here to talk about Windows as a service and how to stay up to date with Windows 10. Obviously, we've made some changes with Windows 10, so we want to give you a review of what those changes are so that you understand what we've done, and then we'll talk more about how to actually implement that when you're using a variety of different management or patching tools. So let's start off just by talking about why. We've heard a lot of feedback from customers over the years about really being able to address a lot of different challenges, including being able to adopt capabilities faster, getting rid of big deployment projects, being more secure, and really just being able to show that IT is providing assets to the organization, not just being an expense. So our big things for Windows as a service really are to address the two that we've highlighted. We want to be able to get capabilities out faster, and we want to get rid of the big deployment projects that organizations have typically done every 3 to 5 years. So we've been trying to do that while at the same time addressing the security challenges, which are growing in complexity and severity all the time, making sure that our users are more productive, and really getting IT back in the forefront of providing value to organizations. So that really becomes the pillars for our Windows 10 release. Being the most trusted platform, so the additional security capabilities that we continue to release. Being the most productive platform by continuing to provide new capabilities for every type of user, from those that use command prompts all the way up through the power user who's going to load gigabytes worth of CAD and other big data type processing sets. Making it more personal because we have new generations of people coming into the workforce that expect that type of customization capabilities. It's not all about IT command and control anymore. It's about providing them an environment where they can be productive. So those become the framing points. Windows as a service then becomes the delivery vehicle for those. So what is Windows as a service then? It's a completely different way to build Windows, deploy Windows, and service Windows. From a building perspective, we're doing it out in the open through the Windows Insider program that Donna talked about this morning. We want to be able to provide new builds of Windows almost on a weekly basis for you to try out and see the capabilities that we're adding, to validate your environment and your applications, to let us know and provide feedback on everything that you see. So in that way, we want to get ready then for the deployment of that, which happens when each of these new releases are finalized and released out into the market. From a deployment perspective, we want to move away from the traditional wipe and load deployments to now using in-place upgrades. A much simpler way of deploying the OS because the system takes care of migrating all your applications, all your data, and all of your settings from your current Windows install to the new one. And from a servicing perspective, we want to make it easier to keep it up to date, to keep it patched. So rather than the Windows patching mechanisms that we've had in the past where there was a lot of complexity and a lot of different updates every month, we moved to a much simpler model where we just have one cumulative update. We keep releasing new cumulative updates that supersede the previous one. So anytime you need to get a Windows 10 PC up to date, you just install the latest cumulative update and you're fully patched. So those are the high level changes. When we look at those from kind of digging in deeper to each one of those, we need to really consider the way that we look at deploying Windows inside of the organization. We expect every organization to have some number of PCs that are following along in our deployment, in our development process, watching those insider preview builds, trying things out, providing us feedback. That might be a fairly small number for most organizations. It could be anything from a few machines up to a few hundred machines, but it's almost always going to be less than 1% of the PCs in an organization, unless maybe you're a development shop and it's your job to try to stay ahead of where the development tools are going. Then maybe it becomes larger. But for most organizations, there would be small numbers. Maybe those are primary machines, maybe those are secondary machines, but you're using those really just to get a feel for how well this release of Windows is going and providing us feedback on anything that's not looking good. All of that is to prepare for the release. The release then will happen as a current branch release. We would basically say, here's the new capabilities. They're now released to the general population. For organizations, that means deploying this to pilot groups, really trying out the new capabilities, but also validating compatibility, as well as your infrastructure and management tools to make sure that they work with these new releases. That could be 10 to 20% of the PCs in the organization. The goal is to deploy this out as broadly as possible so that you can get coverage of the applications used in your environment. We expect them to be compatible. Our compatibility rates are 99% and above. But in order to do that validation, we need to get a large enough population of users so that most of your applications are covered, that most of the people, as part of doing their normal jobs, try out those apps on the new release and pick up the phone and call you if anything goes wrong. That's all to get us ready for current branch for business, where we declare this new release is now ready for broad deployment. We expect that to happen typically after about 4 months. So after 4 months of performing these pilots, getting feedback, addressing issues, we would now say that that release plus this latest cumulative update is now ready to be deployed for the remainder of your organization, which could be 80% of the PCs, with a few in the insider preview, 10 to 20% in the current branch, and the remainder in current branch for business. Now, we recognize that there are some scenarios where there are specialized PCs that aren't necessarily a good candidate for this because the rate of change is too much for those types of devices. But we're talking about things like PCs used to control million-dollar pieces of medical equipment, PCs used to run nuclear power plants, PCs that are used as ATM equipment. So really, those truly special-purpose devices that don't need any new functionality for the life of the device. The percentage in that particular bucket is going to vary by the type of organization. Some organizations obviously have more specialized devices than others, but we would expect that number overall to be fairly small. The best guideline that I would give as far as what PC should be considered for that, if a PC runs Office, it's not a special purpose PC, it's a general purpose PC used for information worker work. So as a result, it's much more suited for current branch or current branch for business instead of LTSB. So that's the rough guideline, but you may have some devices that end up in that long-term servicing branch bucket. When we look at the flow through the whole process, we'll have about 6 months of development through the insider preview, 4 months then for piloting as part of the current branch, where you would have one or more rings for doing that, and then an additional amount of time to do the broad deployment. That whole process from the release through current branch through current branch for business can be, it will be at least 16 months, more like at least 18 months. We'll see where those extra 2 months came from in a moment. But we'll go through this in a cycle. Every so often, we'll be getting a new release that will start this cycle over again. When we look at a patching process and compare this to Windows 7, this is what we see today with most typical Windows 7 environments. People have selectively patched them by picking and choosing the updates that they want to deploy. It's pretty common to deploy all security updates and then selectively deploy non-security updates. That results in a typical PC that looks like this, whereas what we test is a fully patched Windows 7 PC. That fully patched PC runs all of our new fixes without any issues. As we go through and test every new update that we release, we test it on thousands of machines running that particular fully patched configuration. We don't find any issues. Yet when we deploy into this environment where we have selectively patched PCs, we start to see issues caused by the absence of other fixes that were released in the past. So right now, something like 25% of the support calls that we get are solved by fixes that were already released in the past. So we want to get rid of those challenges and move to a model where this can't happen, that the only thing that's happening in the real world is a fully patched PC. So that's the model that we're implementing with Windows 10 to really get rid of that particular scenario. When we talk about updates, it's important to note that there are two different types. Quality updates are the monthly patches that we're used to. Feature updates are the every 6 months or so new releases that we come out with. The quality updates are cumulative. We release at least one per month. You will actually see more than one per month. We'll release one on Patch Tuesday with new security fixes. But then on the other Tuesdays in the month, you might see us release another update with new non-security fixes. Those are kind of previews. You can deploy them, but really they're meant to reduce the amount of change that you would see on the next Patch Tuesday. So imagine on this Patch Tuesday, we release a whole bunch of security fixes. The following Tuesday, we add a whole bunch of non-security fixes. You can deploy those out to your pilot groups so that when the next Patch Tuesday comes along and we add more security fixes into that, you've already validated the non-security fixes that will be included in the payload of that new security update that comes out on Patch Tuesday. So it's really getting into that rhythm where we keep adding additional fixes each time we release these cumulative updates. They always supersede the previous months. We never add new features into a quality update. Those are always reserved for feature updates. And we do have a program if you are interested in previewing the security updates. You can sign up for the security update validation program to get the security updates a week to 2 weeks ahead of when we release those to the public. That program requires a non-disclosure agreement because effectively we're disclosing to you the existence of security vulnerabilities that we haven't yet told the public about, but it does give you the ability to try out those updates farther in advance than you would in the public release scenario, where typically you're trying to get those new fixes deployed as quickly as possible inside your organization. For feature updates, we're targeting about twice per year. We will add new capabilities in those feature updates, hence the name. These are installed using an in-place upgrade mechanism, but behind the scenes, or really to the end user, they look like a standard patch being deployed out to the PC. They're bigger than a typical patch. They take longer than a typical patch, but the end result is something that looks like a patch being applied to the PC. So it's easy to deploy. It's a simple, reliable process. If anything goes wrong during the upgrade, it rolls back to the previous OS. If you run into any issues after the upgrade, you can roll back to the previous OS. So it's designed to be as simple as possible and as reliable as possible. So let's look at this from a timeline perspective. We talked about insider preview and what we would use that for. We use insider preview to plan and prepare for the coming release. Once that release happens, we begin piloting. We expect those pilot deployments to continue for a period of months, hopefully about four, before we declare that this release is now ready for broad deployment and use so that we can then use it for the remainder of its particular life cycle. We then have added onto the end of this a 60-day grace period. And to explain how that grace period comes in, we really need to look at the bigger picture and the rules that go along with it, where we'll have these overlapping releases. Our general support stance is that we'll support two CBB releases in the market at all times. So in that case, that would mean when the third one becomes CBB, the first one is no longer going to be updated. So far, we've had two CBB declarations, the original 1507 release and the 1511 release. The 1607 release hasn't yet been declared CBB, so as a result, we haven't stopped servicing any of the previous releases yet. But that's coming up pretty soon. If we look at 1607, and I can try to be a little artistic, and draw a line here to show that when CBB is declared for 1607, if we follow straight up from that point, we can see that that represents the end of 1507's timeline. That's where that 60-day grace period comes in. Because we can't tell you exactly when we'll declare CBB for 1607, we then can't tell you exactly when we'll stop servicing 1507. So by adding that 60-day grace period, we're basically saying we'll give you an extra 2 months of patches for any straggler PCs that might still be running that 1507 release. We also see a lot of comments from people who say, well, I'm not sure that I can keep up with that pace. Can I skip one of these releases? Could I go directly from, say, the 1507 release to the 1607 release? And while you could do that, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily the best approach to look at. Because let's say you're running 1507 and you want to go directly to 1607. The earliest you could start that deployment is at the release point. So right at that point. And you would want to finish that by the time that there's no longer any servicing, which would happen here. So effectively, what you're saying is you want to be able to complete that entire deployment in a process that's about 6 months long. It's a very risky proposition, just in case you run into anything that doesn't work. That could stop your deployment, and then as a result, you could be left with a significant number of PCs still running 1507 after the point that it's no longer being patched. It'll continue to work. It's not like we're saying that the 1507 release will stop. It continues to run. You'll just not get any more updates for 1507 until you upgrade it to either 1511 or something later that's been released. So when we look at the time frames, we're talking a minimum of 18 months, 4 months for CB, the initial piloting phase, at least 12 months for ongoing deployment and usage, and then that 60-day grace period. But because of the real rule is two supported releases in the market at all times, it can actually be longer than that if our releases are farther apart. So when we look at the time between 1511 and 1607, that was 8 months apart, not 6 months. So as a result, there'll be a couple of extra months in that particular process. And then from 1607, we won't have another release in 2016. Our next release will be sometime in 2017. So there'll be a longer period of time in there as well, which will also stretch out those timelines to something more than 18 months. So we'll guarantee a minimum of 18 months in case you're afraid of us starting to release more frequently than once every 6 months, but it can be longer as we have more time between these releases. So let's talk more about how. When we talk about how, we need to look at the way we used to do the traditional Windows OS deployment. We did this as part of a big project. We would do these big projects every 3 to 5 years. As part of those big projects, we would test all of our applications, we would update our infrastructure, we would build new images, and then we would actually do the deployment itself. That could easily be a 12 to 18 month project that requires a very large number of IT resources pooled together for the duration of that project to get the Windows OS upgraded. What we want to move to is a process where we're doing that twice per year. So in order to do that twice per year, we obviously need to shrink that down to something much smaller. So how do we do that? We really need to look at all the different components. We need to look at the application testing, which tends to be the biggest chunk, and figure out how do we test less. The first thing is, don't break it. Making sure that we can maintain application compatibility at rates higher than 99% is a good first step. But beyond that, we want to move from that proactive advanced testing model to instead focus much more on a reactive model where we do pilot deployments and then just wait for someone to pick up the phone and say, I found this issue as I was going about my normal job. I used this application, I tried to do this particular task, I got this error message. Can you help me? So we want to get into that type of a model because we don't expect there to be too many issues encountered. It doesn't make sense to spend a lot of time and effort trying to find those few issues. It makes much more sense to just do pilots. What we saw in these old deployment projects is even after organizations went through and tested every single application before they did the deployment, they still didn't trust the results. So they would still do pilot deployments out to successive rings of users inside the organization to continue to expand out to validate those applications in the real world. So you're doing a whole lot of work testing those applications. You don't trust the results, and you still do a slow pilot deployment rollout. What we're basically saying is, well, skip that task that isn't really adding any value and just go directly to the pilot itself. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't want to test anything, because there are applications that are absolutely critical to your business. And as a result, you're not going to deploy a single PC until you've made sure that at least the basic functions of those work. That makes perfect sense. So we do think that for most organizations, you're going to focus on maybe 10 to 20% of the applications, validate those ahead of time or maybe in parallel to the initial IT pilots. But for the rest of the applications, let's just deploy, see what happens, and react to any feedback that's found. From an infrastructure perspective, we're trying to simplify that process as well by first not having any strong links between the client operating system and your Windows Server infrastructure. So you don't have to worry about upgrading Windows servers when you deploy Windows 10 into your environment. Any existing Active Directory and server environment will work just fine. It gets a little bit more interesting with System Center Configuration Manager. For those of you who are using that to manage your PCs, it needs to be able to manage not only the new operating system, but also the new features in that operating system. So in order to simplify that process, the System Center team has implemented their own current branch servicing model. They'll continue to update System Center Configuration Manager about every 4 months, so 3 times per year, with new capabilities, first to address new capabilities added in Windows 10, but also in Intune and in some of the other systems that Configuration Manager integrates with. But they've gotten that process simplified to the point where all you need to do to deploy these new Configuration Manager current branch updates is go into the Config Manager console, find the update that's been published, right-click and say install. And it will then upgrade your entire environment, deploying out new client bits, upgrading the servers, taking care of all the steps that are necessary to get that pushed out as quickly as possible. The Config Manager team has been doing that now for about a year, and the rate of adoption on that has been really good, to the point where they're seeing sometimes within hours, customers are upgrading their entire environments to the new releases. They're already seeing for the release that came out in June, was their last one, actually came out in July, but it was a June release, that now, here we are, like 3 months later, they've already deployed 50% of their Config Manager current branch seats to that new release. So customers are being very quick at deploying these updates out throughout their entire organization, which is effectively necessary to support Windows as a service. Config Manager stated that they'll support their current Config Manager current branch release for the new Windows 10 releases, like 16.07, and the previous one. So in that case, that would mean 16.06 of Config Manager and 16.02 of Config Manager both support Windows 10 16.07. 16.06 of Config Manager supports 16.07 and its new features. 16.02 just provides basic manageability of the features that existed before, including things like your standard software distribution, inventory, and other Config Manager capabilities. So definitely some shifts on the infrastructure side to simplify that, some shifts with the Config Manager team to make that much easier. Imaging from a Windows as a Service process really isn't required in order to deploy these feature updates. We can take the standard media provided by us and deploy it directly. So we can greatly reduce the amount of time spent on that. And the deployment process is also then much more simple, because we don't need to reinstall apps, we don't need to re-inject drivers, we don't need to do any of that. We can just start deploying. So that's where we tried to do that shrinking, by trying to eliminate the tasks that we don't think are really required anymore, to get us to the point where we can do this about 10 times as often for about a tenth of the effort that we did before. Now, that does mean that there are going to be people who are constantly in this process. So the idea of spinning up a project, doing it for 12 to 18 months, and then pushing everyone back out to their day jobs is probably going to go away. That instead, you're going to have people that are more or less continually doing this. That you'll always have people figuring out what's new in the insider preview builds. You'll always have people that are doing the pilot deployments. You'll always have people doing the broad deployments through your organization, because you'll end up with this type of an environment. If you follow that, you'll always have three different releases active in your environment at all points in time. So that's the method, the process that we want to get into. So we want to be able to identify some PCs that we can use for insider PCs. We want to separate out the special PCs, the special purpose devices that we want to run LTSB on. We'll handle those differently. We want to recruit volunteers for doing these pilot deployments, because you want people who will pick up the phone and call the help desk, not people who will pick up the phone and call their VP and complain about whatever issue IT hoisted on them this time. And then you can divide up the broad population of PCs really as a risk reduction exercise. You do the pilot deployments, that's about application coverage. You do the broad deployments, that's really just making sure that you don't upgrade all of accounting at once, just in case you find an issue in the accounting applications. You might want to start with a third of accounting and then do a third and another third later in the process. When we look at these different branches, you have to think about current branch and current branch for business being exactly the same thing at different points in time. The initial release of 1607 is considered current branch for a period of about 4 months, and then it's declared current branch for business. It's still 1607. It's not a different set of bits. It's really the same build number, in this case, build 14393, plus the latest cumulative update added on top of it, which fixes the known issues that have been encountered since its release. LTSB is a separate thing. It's a separate set of bits. We did release a new one with the anniversary update, so there is an LTSB 2016 release, but we don't expect to see another one of those for about 3 years, so probably not until 2019. Because this is a special purpose OS, we don't want it to change. We don't want it to pick up any new features for the life of that particular device. The OS itself will be supported for a period of 10 years. During that time, really just bug fixes, just security updates. It'll have a very high servicing bar to make sure that we don't touch anything that could affect these particular devices. That means we have to remove some stuff, because the stuff gets updated frequently via Windows updates or via the Windows Store. So the first thing we had to remove is the Windows Store. Then we remove the inbox store applications and Edge, Cortana, and things like that that have a tendency to have a link between the client operating system pieces and the cloud services that they talk to. Because the cloud services keep evolving, then the client side pieces need to evolve as well, and that would go against the principle of LTSB, hence we remove all that stuff. When we look at this from a patching perspective, we're going to have a different goal with LTSB than we have for the CB and CBB branches. There will be bugs that we choose to fix in CB and CBB that we choose not to fix for LTSB because of the potential impact to the user. An example that came up initially was, let's say that there was a bug with remote assistance in one of the Windows 10 releases. We would fix that in a current branch release. We may choose not to fix that in LTSB because, well, who's using remote assistance for that LTSB release? Now, if we find proof at some point that there are some customers using it, then we will reevaluate that particular decision. But that type of decision-making process is performed for every fix to say, is this a fix that we want to deploy just to CB and CBB, or does it make sense to do it to LTSB as well? So don't be surprised if you see that, if we find an issue, if we fix it fairly quickly in the CB and CBB releases, but have a delay or maybe not at all for fixing that in an LTSB release. When we look at visibly at these two, you can see right away that they are definitely different. if you install a standard Windows 10 install, you see all the inbox applications. If you install an LTSB version, you don't see any of that. You just see the basics, which are, I mean, it's a blank slate that you install your Win32 apps or your Universal Windows Platform apps on top of for whatever special purpose that particular device is going to be used for. So when we talk about CB and CBB, what we generally look at is how do we specify what PCs get what? And we do that on the individual PC by really specifying what we want this PC to get next. So it's not really a CB machine or a CBB machine. It's a machine that has declared when it wants to get the next feature update. If you have a PC that's running 1607 right now, it's deployed 1607 while it's still considered current branch. But you could go in and set a policy saying that you want to defer upgrades, which would then say, I don't want the next one, when it comes out next year, to be deployed until CBB has been declared. So you are really specifying what comes next. The actual implementation, the actual behavior of this is going to vary based on the tool that you're using. So if you're using Windows Update for Business, it's going to look at these policies and determine how much of a delay you want to add. If you're using Configuration Manager or WSUS, more of that is shifted into your responsibility for choosing when that happens. We'll talk about those in a little bit, just to go through the details of that. So the basic deployment process then is to validate the critical business applications and your infrastructure components. That should be that 10 to 20% of apps inside your organization that are considered absolutely critical for your business to function. You'll try those out, make sure that they work, and then begin doing the pilot deployments to the volunteers that you've identified. React to any feedback that they have, which could involve opening cases to Microsoft if you run into any Windows bugs, talking to ISVs if you have any support issues with the apps that you're using, but really getting to the point then that you're ready to start broad deployment after that 4-month pilot period has completed. We talked a little bit about compatibility. Really, overall, on the desktop application side, 99% is pretty much what we've been seeing, what we've been hearing from customers. We expect that to continue. The main reason for that is we're not really changing the Win32 APIs that these apps use. If we don't change the APIs, then every well-behaved application continues to work fine. The challenge is there are some non-well-behaved applications. So imagine that we've got all of these Win32 APIs. We've clearly documented how they work. Everyone uses those. Everyone's good. But there are vendors out there, ISVs, especially for antivirus software, that have a tendency to go around the documented APIs and hook themselves into the OS at much lower levels. And those have a tendency then to be affected by the security changes that we make to the OS. So you will see potentially issues with those sorts of applications. We are working with those vendors first to add more public APIs that they can use for that, and then second to make sure that they're validating their software during the Insider Preview program so that they too can get their applications ready before the actual release occurs. But other than those sorts of issues, we expect that most of the applications will be just fine. I mean, we go through great lengths to make sure that we maintain compatibility. We're constantly testing a suite of thousands of applications. We're watching telemetry from the Insider Preview PCs. We're monitoring feedback from our feedback hub and our support customers, really just making sure that we can address all of those issues as early in the process as we can. From a website perspective, Windows 10 includes IE 11. So from a compatibility standpoint, if you've already gone through the work to migrate to IE 11 in enterprise mode on Windows 7, you're already set for Windows 10. Because we include IE 11 as is with all the existing enterprise mode capabilities that you're used to. We've actually taken it a couple of steps further in Windows 10. With Microsoft Edge being the primary browser, and IE then relegated to kind of the compatibility browser for everything else. So you can define enterprise mode rules that say, let's use Edge as our primary browser, but if anyone types in one of these URLs, redirect it to IE. So IE 11 automatically opens, automatically loads that particular website. With Windows 10 16.07, we've also implemented the reverse. So there's now a policy in IE 11 where if you type in a URL in IE 11 that doesn't require IE 11 because it's not on the compatibility list, it'll redirect that back to Edge. So it's going to try to force you to only use IE 11 for websites that really need it and use Edge for everything else. So we think that we'll be in good shape from a website perspective using Edge for the modern HTML5 well-behaved web pages and IE 11 for those older crusty web pages that were implemented during the days of IE 6, 7, 8, 9. So you can use the two of them together to solve that challenge. From a hardware perspective, Windows 10 has the same hardware requirements as Windows 7, the same driver model. For the most part, drivers that work with Windows 7 will continue to work with Windows 10. There are some exceptions. There are some drivers that during the upgrade from Windows 7 to Windows 10 will discard the drivers that are currently there and move to a better inbox Windows 10 driver, especially around display drivers and Bluetooth drivers. But most of the other existing drivers will continue to work out okay. For modern applications on Windows 7, they don't exist, so you don't have to worry about those if you're coming from Windows 7. But for Windows 8 and Windows 8.1, we did have the Universal Windows platform there as well. We would expect most of those apps will continue to work as well. We tested a lot of those already because we've got them in the Windows Store, and we can run test automation against them to make sure we don't break anything. So overall, the modern application story should be pretty good as well. To help out with the kind of the flip side of this, if we say an application works and you observe that an application works, but you want to make sure your vendor actually supports it, that's been a bit of a roadblock for customers saying, we got to go research all of our applications with all of our vendors and make sure that they actually support Windows 10. The fact that we see that it works without any issues is not good enough. So to help with that, we've implemented this Ready for Windows program where we will consolidate information about these support statements all into one place so you can easily search for a particular application and try it out, really just to be able to see that this vendor has released a support statement for it. I had to wake my PC up again. So if we look at Ready for Windows, let me find my, someone knocked my power cord off as my PC went to sleep. So if we go to Ready for Windows, we can search for a particular application. Like if we want to know information about Citrix applications, we can search by vendor or by application, and then be able to see a particular application like Citrix Receiver and have a link here that says, yes, this is supported on Windows 10, and a link then to the Citrix website where you can find more information. So that's a good start, but we also have all of this telemetry data from our Windows PCs that allow us to see which versions are actually commonly used on Windows 10, with the basic idea being that if you see an application that's highly adopted, that means we can see proof that this particular application version is in use on thousands or hundreds of thousands of PCs out there in the real world. So that's probably not an application that you need to worry about, not one that you need to focus your testing on. Now, if you see that you're running a particular version that has insufficient data, you might look at that and say, well, maybe it would be better if we upgraded to a more recent release that's showing much more adoption. But by providing you that data, we allow you to make better choices about where you focus your testing effort and where you just look at this and say, oh yeah, this is such a broadly used application and we can see it's being used on Windows 10, therefore we don't want to test it. So that's the process that we want to get into. We want to make sure everyone maintains an application portfolio. You need to know what you have and what you support in order to prioritize it. Once you know what that list is and you prioritize it, focusing on what's business critical, you can then pre-validate or test those business critical applications. And then we can do pilot deployments for broader validation steps. To help with that process, we are introducing a new service called Windows Upgrade Analytics. Windows Upgrade Analytics is a system that collects information from the PCs in your environment, matches that with the Ready for Windows data that we just looked at, as well as known incompatibilities. So we can tell you, based on what we see in your environment, here are some issues that you should work on to address before you deploy this latest feature update. Here are some drivers that might need some work to make them compatible before you deploy. So it's really about making this a more manageable process. So if we look at Windows Upgrade Analytics, we can see the sort of information that's gathered from the PCs in your environment. Now, this would be potentially Windows 7, Windows 8.1, and Windows 10 PCs. We can collect this information from all of them. And after tagging these PCs with an identifier that says all of these belong to your organization, we can then show you results through the Azure Operations Management Suite portal to show you information on the PCs that you have. And then it just becomes a process of walking through the preparation steps, so preparing your environment by looking at which computers need some work, which ones have already been deployed, looking at which applications might not be installed on a whole lot of PCs versus which ones have been tagged as business critical, resolving issues that we know about, so we have some applications that do need some specific attention because maybe they're not compatible with the version of Windows 10 that you're deploying. We can see which PCs are ready to upgrade because they don't have any issues at all. And we can also see in cases where there are some driver issues, what steps might be necessary to address those before we do the deployment. So really the information that it's showing you are the compatibility checks that the in-place upgrade would do when you did the deployment of Windows 10, which would cause it to fail and roll back to the previous OS. So by taking this information and using it ahead of time, we can get rid of those failures by just fixing them before we actually did that deployment. Once we have worked through those issues, we can get a population of PCs then that are ready to deploy. We can actually download that information as a spreadsheet and then import it into a management tool like Config Manager. We're also building a connector between Config Manager and this data so it can synchronize this directly to make it really easy for you to then take the list of PCs that are ready and turn that into a deployment plan from there. We also have information, the ability to collect information about website usage. This is an optional thing to turn on because there are some privacy concerns around this. But if you turn it on, it'll collect details about all the different websites that are being visited by people in your organization. It can be scoped down to just internal applications if you want. It could also be filtered to specific lists of domains if you want. But otherwise, it's going to tell you about all the websites that people in your organization are visiting, including ones that you may not ever want to know about. But it's useful then to be able to target the compatibility fixes that are used for enterprise mode for those particular websites. So it's useful to try out. It is a free service. You can sign up in a matter of minutes and then configure your PCs to provide all of this information into the Upgrade Analytics service and then run reports against that and drill into the data that's been collected to be able to see the specifics for the issues that have been encountered. What was the question? Will it tell you the users that are using those websites? That's a good question. Let me see if I can drill into one of those. Yes, it will tell you the computers that access those websites. So it's not necessarily the user that was on the computer, it tells you that the computer that they were using. But since in most cases they're one-to-one between users and computers, it would tell you which machines are using it as well. So, I already did that. Let's talk about some of the challenges then. One is size of these deployments. When we talk about quality updates that we push out every month, they're cumulative, so each month they get bigger as we add new fixes to them. Initially for 16.07, the updates start out pretty small, and then each month they continue to grow. Same thing happened with Windows 10, 15, 11. Started out small, continued to grow over time. By about a year later, we're now about a year from the 15.11 release, that update is about a gigabyte. So if you're using Config Manager or third-party patching tools that don't understand how to do express updates, they're downloading about a gigabyte per PC per month. That's a bit on the painful side. So we're recommending, well, first, use express updates whenever possible, which works well with Windows Update for Business, and WSUS. We're working to add support for that in Config Manager and these third-party patching tools. But in the meantime, using a peer-to-peer deployment mechanism that can do fan-out distribution of the bits related to this. We've got a few different technologies that work for this. I've got a session later this afternoon to go more in-depth into these, talking about branch cache, delivery optimization, and the Config Manager peer-to-peer capabilities that they're working on, really to take the burden off of your data center and off of your distribution points and pushing that out into the edges of your network so that one PC can download the update and then share it to the other PCs that are nearby. That's easy to do. It generally has about a 90% success rate by making sure that the content can come from other PCs rather than from that data center. So let's talk about tools then. The simplest case is just point all your PCs to Windows Update and let them patch themselves every time we release an update. How many of you do that today? Not a big surprise, not a big number. Windows Update for Business then provides a set of policies on top of that to let you specify more rules. So those rules allow you to say, I want to deploy new quality updates after a month or 2 months or whatever duration you want to specify. So that gives you more control, but it's still more of a rules-based mechanism for deploying the updates. If you run into a particular problem, you can go into Windows Update for Business and set the policy to say, please pause the deployment of this update until we resolve that particular issue. But it can't be paused forever. You can just pause it as you work out that issue. It will automatically resume the deployment after something like 35 days before it continues on. We then still continue to support Windows Server Update Services, WSUS. WSUS is fairly popular with pretty much any small to mid-sized customer, really moving into the enterprise space somewhat, but most enterprises then look at System Center Configuration Manager as kind of the ultimate in control. With WSUS, you can have automatic deployment rules where you deploy updates as they're released, or you can manually deploy updates. Actually, we probably want to do both, and we'll talk a little bit about that as we get into this to see what that would look like. With Config Manager, you've got multiple servicing options. You can do patch deployments using automatic deployment rules. You can also do manual patch deployments. They have separate capabilities using Windows 10 servicing features that have been added into Config Manager to do feature update deployment, using a similar type of model where you just define the rules and then just let Config Manager execute them for you. So let's walk through those. We'll ignore the Windows Update one because that one's the easiest. Just don't set anything and the PCs will automatically grab updates from Windows Update. If we want to use Windows Update for Business, this is really a set of policies on top of Windows. So if we go to my PC, we can see what those policies are. Easiest way is to just run the group policy editor. Ignore the errors in my insider preview builds. And if we drill into Windows components, Windows Update defer Windows updates. We have new policies in Windows 10 1607. In Windows 10 1511, there was a single policy called defer Windows upgrades and updates. We split that into two in Windows 10 1607, so we can control quality updates by specifying that we want to enable this policy and then specify the number of days that we want to defer receiving it. So we could say anywhere from 0 to 30 days to defer that particular patch. For feature updates, we get a few more additional options. First, we can choose whether we want current branch deploy right after release or current branch for business after the 4-month declaration. And then we can specify the number of days that we want to defer after that point in time. So that's the basic policy that's in place on every PC. Let me see if I can reconnect to my server. Of course not. Lost my VPN connection. So we can configure different groups of PCs to have different sets of settings. So we could have a pilot group that says deploy at CB plus 0 days. We could have another pilot group that waited for some number of days after that, and we can continue on from there. Man, hang on a sec, I have to type my password right. I just changed it. I can't do it by memory yet. Is there a way to reset the counter for what? Oh, for the pause. The 35 days is from the point where it's checked. And if you uncheck it and then recheck it, it's only going to apply to the current update that's out at that particular point in time. So it would then take effect for the subsequent updates and give you 35 days based on that one, but it does get a little tricky. The assumption is that whatever issue you're running into, you can address within a fairly short period of time. So it's not the most flexible in the world as far as pausing it. If you want much more control than that, then you would probably look at WSUS or Config Manager. In the case of Windows Update for Business, what we would typically do is we would create a set of group policies and target different policies to each group of PCs. So we would have a pilot group for IT, where if we edited that particular policy, we would see those same settings under Policies, Administrative Templates. Windows Components, Windows Update, Defer. And we would enable the policy exactly how we wanted it for that group of machines. So in this case, we would say current branch plus 0 days. Once we have that policy then, we can target that to a specific group of PCs. Simplest way with GPO to do that is create security groups containing those PCs and then target the policies to that particular security group. So our first pilot group would go to the IT machines, second one of early adopters can go to the early adopter group, third one can go to early adopter group number two. If we look at the differences, they all have those same policies set, but they just specify a different number of days. So all we would need to do is go into Windows Components, Windows Update, Defer, and enable the policy, specify when. So it's a pilot PC, so based on current branch, we could say current branch plus 45 days if we wanted to wait for that particular group of machines. So that's how you would configure different groups of PCs to get the updates at different points in time by going in and creating these GPOs that specify for quality updates, I want to wait X number of days for each group. For feature updates, I want to be current branch or current branch for business, and then wait an additional set of days. This is something that we continue to work on to provide these capabilities through Windows Update for Business, where you can kind of get rid of the infrastructure that you have today for updating. We will have more work to do on this as we get deeper into this to provide more capability. So it's still a work in progress. We did add the new policies in 1607. We will continue working on this with the next release to provide more reporting and compliance capability. So definitely we've got more work going on. If we look at WSUS, we end up with the same type of capability with WSUS. There are some hot fixes that are needed on WSUS to add support for the feature updates. Those are supported for WSUS 4.0 and above, so only in Windows Server 2012 and above. So if you're still using WSUS on Windows Server 2008 or 2008 R2, it's time to upgrade to get the ability to do feature updates. You can still do patches without these fixes, so you can still use WSUS 3 to do patching, but to do feature updates, you do need to use at least WSUS 4. To support this in WSUS, we do have the new upgrades classification. So if we go into WSUS under options for products and classifications, obviously you need to select Windows 10 in the list, but there's a new upgrades choice that needs to be enabled. Once you have that, then if you're doing deployment of these using WSUS, we can create computer groups inside of WSUS and then target those computer groups at different points in time. So maybe we have an automatic approval rule for pilots saying that the IT group, when a new update shows up in the upgrades category, automatically approve it for pilot IT. And maybe for the first early adopters group, we'll do the same thing, but give it a 14-day deadline so that people don't have to install it right away. They can choose when they install it. But then for the other ones, we may manually approve them just by going to the group, actually going to the upgrades themselves, like the upgrade to Windows 10 Enterprise 1607, and then say we want to approve that for a particular pilot group. So by saying approve for install, we then begin the deployment to that additional group of PCs. So we basically do our ring deployment in WSUS just by setting up additional computer groups for each ring and then deploy to each of those rings as we go through. In the case of System Center Configuration Manager, you have multiple options. Well, first for the patching, you continue to deploy patches exactly the way you do today. Hopefully you already have the ability to do ring deployments today with Config Manager by setting up different collections and then targeting updates to different collections at different points. With Windows, with the Configuration Manager current branch releases, they've added support for servicing plans. These servicing plans are to provide similar capabilities to what we just looked at to deploy the Windows 10 feature updates when they come out. So if we look in Config Manager, we can define collections of PCs, same basic structure, populate those with the PCs that we want to deploy. And then in the software library, we can look at the available feature updates that have been released and look at the servicing plans, which basically say, when do we want to deploy to what? So if we create a servicing plan, we basically specify a collection that we want to target them to. So maybe this is a broad deployment servicing plan. Helps when I can see the next button. We then specify whether to do it right away when it's current branch or to wait on business ready. In this case, we could say business ready plus whatever we wanted, maybe 51 days after it's business ready. We could filter by language if we wanted to, or on a variety of other things, but basically we just define the rules like any software update, tell it where to put the package files, the installation files for that, and Config Manager does all the rest. download the updates that are needed from the internet for the languages that we've specified, and it'll take care of making that so. So again, it's basically deployment on autopilot, that you define all of these rules once and let Config Manager take care of deploying them out the way you want them and on the date that you want them. If you want more control over that, you can continue to use Config Manager task sequences to do that. You can create an upgrade task sequence in Config Manager, select the Windows 10 1607 bits to deploy via that task sequence, and then deploy out from there. And we are right on time. Obviously, we got started late, so we're ending late. But any additional questions around Windows as a Service as we're wrapping up? Question over there. Will you still have what? Yeah, effectively, the Windows 10 servicing capabilities in Config Manager are built around the ADR capabilities that you use for software updates today. So they don't take away the ADRs. The ADRs are still there for the monthly patches. The servicing node is then just used for feature updates. Looks like everyone's going to run to the next session. So if there are any other questions, find me up front. Otherwise, thanks for attending. Please fill out your evaluations, and hopefully I'll see you later this afternoon.